Axis Mundi.
Welcome to One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew L. Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the author of The Founding Myth and American Crusade. This is a podcast about religion, the law, and the battle for America's soul. We'll be separating church and state, defending freedom and equality, and fighting Christian nationalism. If you haven't already, sign up for our weekly bonus content and ad-free listening at accessmundi.us. LFG, folks. It's Taco Tuesday. Trump always chickens out. Google it, because we've got other news to cover. The Ten Commandments in Texas. Donald Trump picks a fight with Leonard Leo. Woohoo! And Speaker Mike Johnson needs to read The Founding Myth, because he put his foot in his mouth on the app formerly known as Twitter. Folks, I've got some good guests lined up for the future and some other ideas for the show, but as always, if there's something you want me to cover, reach out on social media and let me know. But first up, we are messing with Texas. A bunch of civil rights organizations announced this week that they are going to be suing Texas for its new law that plans to put framed copies of a version of the Ten Commandments in every public school classroom. Now, I say a version of the Ten Commandments because there's not really any standard version. Y'all who have read The Founding Myth know that the first question we always have to ask when we are told that the Ten Commandments influenced the founding of America, or are the basis of our morality, or are the basis of the Constitution, we have to ask, I'm sorry, which Ten Commandments are you referring to? Because there is no single agreed upon version. The standard version of the Ten Commandments that lives in the American psyche, thanks to Cecil B. DeMille, is not actually called the Ten Commandments in the Bible. And in any single Bible, you can find four different sets of commandments. Exodus 20, Exodus 34, Deuteronomy 5, and Deuteronomy 27 all have versions of Ten Commandments. And that's just in one Bible. There's intra-biblical differences. And then, of course, there are inter-biblical differences, because there are dozens of different English translations of Bibles and thousands of translations of the Bible into other languages, and each render the commandments differently, sometimes slightly, sometimes significantly. These inter-biblical differences may not seem consequential or significant to us, but they really can be. The New Revised Standard Version of Exodus chapter 20, verse 4, for instance, prohibits idols. But the King James Version prohibits graven images. One says idols, one says graven images. Now, today, looking back, this discrepancy may seem incomprehensible, inconsequential. Andrew, who cares? But differing interpretations like these produced martyrs and split Christendom in the 8th and 9th centuries, split it right down the middle during what became known as the iconoclast controversy. Christianity went to war with itself over that difference. And then there are, of course, the differences between the Jewish and Christian sects in how to number and interpret any of the different sets of commandments that appear in any of those different interpretations of any of those different chapters of any of those different Bibles. And I explain all this in my book, The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American. And any of those small differences are, of course, magnified because those different sects of Judaism and Christianity historically have claimed to possess the ultimate truth. And any deviation from an absolute truth is, by definition, significant. Is, by definition, significant. And let's not forget, too, that these minor variations are further magnified by the fact that, James Madison put it well, that the torrents of blood that have been spilled, trying to eliminate religious differences and impose state-sanctioned versions of religious truth. And that is what the state of Texas has done here. They have written their own version of the Ten Commandments. They didn't pick and choose among these different commandments. They basically just mashed a bunch of different Protestant versions together. And then they edited out some stuff, which we'll get to in a minute. This is Texas scripture. They edited your Holy Bible, Christians, your Holy Bible, Jewish listeners. They edited it for you. A bunch of legislators in Texas, using their state power, felt competent to edit the holy book. How does that not infuriate you? How are you not standing up against this? And how is it that Christian nationalists are pushing it? Well, we know the answer to that. We'll talk more about that on this podcast time and time and time and time and time again. But let's talk a little bit about the lawsuit, because we've got Americans United for Separation of Church and State has announced this, along with the ACLU, the ACLU of Texas, the Freedom From Religion Foundation. As we are recording this, Governor Abbott has not yet signed this bill into law. He's going to. He's announced that he's going to. It's going to happen. And the lawsuit will be filed sometime after that. But I want us to talk about here today the why. The why this is important, but also the how we talk about that why. Because I think our side falls down when it comes to this. Do these displays of the Ten Commandments in public school classrooms violate Supreme Court precedent? Yes, they do. Very clearly. Stone versus Graham was decided almost 5 decades ago, said that you can't put up Ten Commandments displays in public school classrooms. This bill does that. Very clear, simple violation of precedent. But that's not why we're fighting them. And we shouldn't explain that as the reason that we are fighting them. Yes, let's make it a justification at some point, but it's not our core why. Are these clear violations of the separation of church and state? Why, yes, they are. But it's not just that they trespass a constitutional principle. Religious displays are symbols. They are intended to be symbolic. They are meant to communicate a deep and resonant image, a message. They are meant to tell you, the viewer, the captive kindergartner or third grader or seventh grader, which God is approved by the government, which God you should pray to, which religion is correct. The state of Texas's version of the Ten Commandments begin, I am the Lord thy God, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And that is pretty goddamn clear. And that is the message that they are going to put up in every single classroom. That tells the Buddhist student that they're wrong. Their worship is wrong. Their religion is wrong. And the Muslim kid that their God is false. And the Hindu child that their religion is fallacious. And the non-religious, an atheist, and agnostic kids are told by the state that they're misguided and foolish and deluded. But that's not all. The message is far worse than that. Because these commandments tell each and every one of those kids, atheists, Hindu, Muslim, Buddhist, and yes, Jewish, and yes, the wrong kind of Christian, that they are not welcome. In the public school where they are required to be, they are not welcome. They are lesser than. They are inferior. The state of Texas is dividing a captive audience of school children along religious lines, favoring the chosen few with a message of welcome and acceptance and ostracizing everybody else. So it's not just that the displays violate clear precedent and a founding American principle, they do, but they foment inequality. And they are meant to. These displays are monuments to inequality. And I want all of you to understand that this is something about the separation of church and state that we have understood from the beginning. It fosters equality. Violations of church-state separation foment inequality, but the wall of separation between church and state fosters equality. And the founders knew this. When Virginia was considering a tax to support Christian preachers, this was before the U.S. Constitution, James Madison wrote one of the first and best defenses of church-state separation, the Memorial and Remonstrance Against Religious Assessments. This is from circa June 1785. Religious assessments being those taxes, you're being assessed to benefit religion. And Madison systematically dismantles the argument for such a tax. It's short and it's worth reading today, and there's 15 numbered points that land like thunderous blows on the idea that the government should be involved in the business of religion. And yes, I was shadowboxing. And equality is one of the roundhouses that Madison lands. In the ninth point, he writes about it. He tells us that when the government establishes a religion, such as by imposing a tax to support preachers. And I think certainly included in that would be posting a government version of a holy text, a religious message on a wall before a captive audience of schoolchildren wouldn't be included there. That doing so, quote, degrades from the equal rank of citizens all those whose opinions in religion do not bend to those of the legislative authority. Distant as it may be in its present form from the Inquisition, it differs from it only in degree. The one is the first step, the other the last in a career of intolerance. End quote. Degrades from the equal rank of citizens all whose opinions in religion do not bend to those of the legislative authority. And that is a perfect encapsulation of what we are talking about. And in case you're wondering, that is actually the point. When this bill was being debated, and there are some brilliant viral clips floating around, especially from Representative James Tallarico, go check him out. But when it was being debated, amendments to include or replace the commandments with a Catholic version of the commandments or a Jewish version of the commandments were rejected out of hand. And Representative Vincent Perez from El Paso explained to a Texas NPR station, quote, these aren't trivial differences. They reflect profound theological traditions. By pretending these differences don't exist, the bill doesn't restore tradition. It distorts it. End quote. Wonder if Perez has read the founding myth. We often hear two major justifications for these displays. And the first is that the Ten Commandments are a moral guide. And the second is that they are the basis of American law. Neither is true. And the text of Texas's Ten Commandments, which is a tongue twister, the text proves that both of those claims are bullshit. How? Well, first, let's just admit, yeah. Sure, some of the Ten Commandments here overlap with criminal laws that prohibit murder and theft and perjury, including laws that are in Texas. But the rules as written in the Ten Commandments in the Bible and here are not exclusive or original to Christianity or Judeo-Christianity, which, put a pin in that phrase, we'll get to it down below. Put a pin in that phrase, we'll get to it in a moment when we're talking about Mike Johnson. These are universal human principles that every successful society we know of has adopted. And there's really compelling evidence to suggest that the biblical version of these prohibitions doesn't apply to anybody but fellow believers. In other words, the biblical version of these universal principles was not universal. Either way, it's really hard to credibly claim that the biblical iterations of universal rules is what influenced the American founding. Again, universal. And the rest of the Ten Commandments are downright un-American. Again, beginning, I am the Lord your God, you shall have no other gods before me. That divine command embodies principles that directly conflict with the principles on which the United States was founded. No law can tell an American to worship a god, let alone which god. We are free to be godless, as I and a growing number are, or if you want to, you can worship every god from every holy book or somewhere in between. And the commandments continue in this un-American vein. They prohibit free expression and art, right? The graven images or idols that we talked about. They prohibit free speech. Can't take the Lord's name in vain. They sanction slavery twice. For instance, in Exodus 20, verses 10 and 17. The Ten Commandments also promise to punish innocent children to the third and fourth generation. That's a quote. To the third and fourth generation, if parents are brazen enough to exercise the religious freedom guaranteed to them in the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. Right? If you try to go worshiping other gods, we're going to punish your children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, to the third and fourth generation. You get the point. The Tenth Commandment might even be the worst. It condones slavery, treats women as property, chattel, and criminalizes thought all in the same breath. Whew. Amazing to squeeze that much awfulness into one sentence. But you know what? Here is something interesting. Texas's chosen commandments, the version that the state edited and drafted itself, the version that the state drafted itself, edit out those horrific parts. You won't find the mentions of slavery, or a jealous God punishing innocent kids, or treating women as chattel. And think about what that means for the claim that these rules are the basis of our morality. How can these rules be a moral guide when we're using our morality to edit out slavery, which appears in the original Ten Commandments? To edit out punishing innocent children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren, which appears in the original Ten Commandments. To remove the bits about treating women as property, which is in the original Ten Commandments. The Ten Commandments in the Bible do not live up to our moral standards. Slavery, punishing innocents, treating humans as property, these fail any moral test. And if they are the basis of American law, why are they in conflict with American law? They fail any moral test. And the Texas legislature has confessed that here by editing the Bible, editing the Ten Commandments, supposedly the basis of our moral law, according to the reason they're proposing this in the first place, and they've edited out a bunch of it to make it more moral. In other words, they're immoral, and these legislators are using their modern morality to edit the Bible. And if they are the basis of American law, to get back to that other point, why are they in conflict with American law? Why are they downright un-American? Why are the Ten Commandments downright un-American? Here's a better question. If they're the basis of American law, why were the Ten Commandments never mentioned during the Constitutional Convention? The Bible itself was almost entirely absent from that convening. But nobody at the Constitutional Convention, where they drafted the governing document of this country, ever mentions the Ten Commandments at all, let alone points to them as an important influence on the founding of this country. And obviously the answer is because they were not influential in the slightest. The Ten Commandments are not a moral guide. The Ten Commandments are not the basis of American law and government. The Ten Commandments are un-American. We got two other stories that I want to get to, and the second one is kind of fun. It's not the biggest deal, but as the GIF says, let them fight. Donald Trump has gone after Leonard Leo. Leonard Leo, the man who famously fucked the Supreme Court, who captured the Supreme Court, the man who was charged with maintaining the ideological purity of the Supreme Court judicial nominees, the man who has done so much to drag this country back to a time when conservative straight white Christian men ruled. So Donald Trump lost a rather important case at the U.S. Court of International Trade, as he put it, incredibly ruled against the United States of America on desperately needed tariffs. Yes, Trump did lose. His tariffs were basically declared unconstitutional. I'm not going to get into the details of this. This is beside the point. There are other podcasts I'm sure that you're listening to that are doing a better job. I don't want to touch on that right now. I will say that the Federal Circuit has stayed this order striking down all the tariffs, which also included like paying money back to to these businesses that had to cover the tariffs. So really fun, fascinating stuff. Unfortunate that the Federal Circuit did what it did, but it's likely going to end up at the Supreme Court at some point. But Trump lost his shit, and that's what I want to talk about. Trump lost his shit when this happened. Where do these initial three judges come from? How is it possible for them to have potentially done such damage to the United States of America? Is it purely a hatred of Trump, which he has in quotes and all caps for some reason? What other reason could it be? I was new to Washington, and it was suggested that I use the Federalist Society as a recommending source on judges. I did so, openly and freely, but then realized that they were under the thumb of a real sleazebag, that's also in quotes, a real sleazebag named Leonard Leo, a bad person who, in his own way, probably hates America, and obviously has his own separate ambitions. He openly brags about how he controls judges and even justices of the Supreme Court. Okay, so Trump is pissed at Leonard Leo for this loss and is going after him publicly on this was a Truth Social post. And really, you just love to see it. You love to see it. You have heard me talk many times on this program about wedges that we could drive into the Christian nationalist movement. And please go pick up a copy of American Crusade from your library if you're not familiar with who Leonard Leo is. We will do a deep dive into him at some point on this show. But basically, he's this incredibly influential and devout conservative Catholic who recognized that the conservative movement in this country would never win in the electoral politics of their policies. In other words, their policies are wildly unpopular. And this still happens today. We still see this in poll after poll after poll. The things that they want to do, whether it's, you know, banning abortion or banning contraception or, you know, undoing marriage equality, the things that they want to do are wildly unpopular. And so they can't get them done through democratic means. They can't get them done in a democracy. Even with everything gerrymandered and with the Electoral College and all of the different structural benefits for minority rule, they still can't get it done because it's so fucking unpopular. And so what they decided to do, looking around, he said we needed to stack the courts. And that's what they did. They set out to capture the courts. And that is how they've been doing the bulk of their change. And just think about what all that the Supreme Court has done to dismantle the separation of church and state and advance Christian nationalist interests. From undoing Roe to the just slew of opinions that we've seen come out of that court. And it is a fundamentally anti-democratic mission that he is on. And Trump's not wrong. He has bragged about how he's controlled and selected. And, you know, I mean, he and Clarence Thomas are on stage. And Clarence Thomas, the Justice of the Supreme Court, is joking about how Leonard Leo is the third most powerful man in America. Joking about it. But jokes are only funny because there's a grain of truth behind them. And sometimes they're still not funny. So I just wanted to highlight this because we've been talking a lot on this podcast about the wedges that we can drive into the Christian nationalist movement. And it is something that I've asked every one of our experts. And it's going to be a theme, certainly moving ahead. This is the thing that is consuming my mind. And there is clearly a wedge here. And I think it's twofold. It's not just the tariffs. It's not just Trump losing on something that he has made his signature policy. He's going to lose on it anyway because it's so fucking unpopular and it's going to do such damage to people. Right? It's a guaranteed loser. But I think there's also this element of Leo being the powerful puppet master behind Trump. And you can see Trump's back getting up, and you can see him bristling to this, right? Like he says, I did this openly and freely. But then I realized they were under the thumb of this real sleazebag, right? Like he's doing it out in the open, but there's this other guy behind the scenes pulling the strings, right? He hates America and he's got his own separate ambitions. And I think this is something that we ought to lean into. I would like to send me your cartoons of Leonard Leo pulling the puppet strings behind Donald Trump and making him dance. Make the videos. Get out there. Make the posts. Show me your... No, this... Do the... protest signs. I want Leonard Leo, puppet master of Trump protest signs at the No Kings March. Send me your pictures. Best one gets a signed book from me. So you share them with me on social media, Instagram or Blue Sky or Threads or Twitter. And we'll, after sometime after the No Kings March, take a picture of yourself at the No Kings March. I will send you, I'll pick a winner and send you a book. Best sign wins. And I just made this all up on the spot. That was not in my outline for today. So hey, you know, whatever. Okay. Let them fight, as the GIF says. That's the main thing. Let's find those wedges. Let's drive them in. Okay. And lastly today, we got to get into Speaker Mike Johnson, who just, in a remarkable feat of flexibility, really just swallowed his whole foot, just shoved his whole foot into his mouth on Twitter. It will always be Twitter to me. I can dead name Twitter, I think. X. I think that's fair. I don't think that's inconsiderate. So Johnson is on Twitter, and he says, he writes, he quote tweets a screenshot of a Rachel Maddow blog post. No, not Rachel Maddow, but her blog, which the headline of this post is, "Why Pete Hegseth Leading a Christian Prayer Service at the Pentagon is So Problematic." And there's a DOD account that features this screenshot and says, "Only the mainstream media would be upset that SecDef, Pete Hegseth, loves the Lord," in all caps. Okay. First of all, not what they said. Not upset that somebody loves the Lord. But leading a prayer service, abusing your power to do that, is not the same thing. Surely the people who work at the Department of Defense are intelligent enough to understand that. And that means that this is a deliberate bait and switch, just churning out red meat for the base. Johnson sees this and has his own take on it. He says, quote, "The liberal media refuses to acknowledge that our country was founded on Judeo-Christian principles and ethics." Whoo boy, Mikey. I seem to have written something about that exact argument at some point in time. Johnson continues, quote, "Their stubborn denial on this objective fact," oh my goodness, not an objective fact, "further undermines their credibility." Okay. Again, he's treating this as an objective fact, refusing to acknowledge it. And this is the central tenet of Christian nationalism. Because it's not just that we were founded as a Christian nation, because you can push back against that, and people do successfully all the time, but then the fallback immediately becomes, well, I mean, we were founded on Christian principles. And then it becomes, well, Judeo-Christian principles. And that is what you see here. Johnson saying, refusing to acknowledge our country was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. This is literally the thesis that I set out to debunk in The Founding Myth. And if you have not read it, please, again, go pick it up from your library. Thanks for listening to the free version of today's episode. To get the whole conversation, unfiltered and unfettered, sign up at accessmundi.us. Costs less than that latte you bought on the way to work, and I am just as delicious. Signing up also gets you premium content from Straight White American Jesus and other Access Mundi shows. Try it. You can always change your mind, because life is too good to waste on bad ideas. This has been One Nation Indivisible. I'm Andrew Seidel. Until next time.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams 4-Day Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains June 6th through the 9th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Shop the sale online or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.